Hi there, Dr. B here with your Module 3 clarifying lecture. So what I'll do is I'll go over the behaviors bios, which I just got back to you. I'll talk about the inner teaching project, and I'll talk about any questions that you might have. So let's talk about the behaviors bio. Remember, there's nothing due in Module 4. Your draft is due in Module 5. So in my Module 4 clarifying lecture, I'll talk more about the draft. But as a heads up, basically, all you're doing is making sure that there is enough information for a peer review. That's it. That's what the draft is for. Some things that I noticed in your annotated bibliography, for the most part, they looked pretty good. Make sure that you're defining all technical jargon, and this is going to be important in the paper as well. So I really want you to take that technical jargon and make sure that you're defining it in your own words. That way, I know you know what you're talking about. Make sure that you're checking your APA style. I saw a lot of people capitalize the entire journal article name. Only the first word of the journal article is capitalized. And make sure that you write out acronyms and define them the first time you use them. I saw a lot of people write out PECS and BR20 and all these types of things. Make sure that you're defining them first. And also, just as a reminder, when you're doing your drafts, it's not enough to have a bibliography. You also must have in-text citations, even if you're paraphrasing. So just as a heads up. Some little things to remember. One is that there is no such thing as behavioral analysis. We don't analyze behaviorally, we analyze behavior. It's kind of one of those tells in behavior analysis where, unfortunately, people judge you on it. So make sure that you're saying behavior analysis, not behavioral analysis. Also remember that research cannot prove, it can only support. I always say that proof is for math. What research does is that it supports. And why is that important? Because when we're looking at research, we're looking at one article. Now, that article may get a set of results, but it most likely has some things that are less than perfect about it, some confounds. So now somebody else goes to replicate it. It's only through multiple replications getting the same results that we can say, yeah, we got something here. One article cannot prove anything because there could be a replication that comes out and that replication doesn't support the results that this guy got. Does that mean that this person over here is somehow wrong or a fraud or anything? No, that's just how science works. That we get data, we analyze those data, we, you know, show our results, and as we know more, our results change. So that's why research cannot prove. All right, let's talk about inner teaching. This is also true for your behaviors bio. All of the feedback is put directly in the Google Docs. So I see some people saying, I'm not getting feedback. You are. Go into the Google Doc and you will get detailed feedback on the things that I'm seeing. Try to avoid any quotes in your inner teaching. I really, really want to stress that I want you to keep practicing putting this stuff in your own words. It's going to be very important that you're able to describe this stuff to families. But it's also important that you have the precision in your language that when you go to use these principles, that you're going to be able to use them correctly. And if you start saying reinforce a person or you start to get a little loose with the terms, you're probably going to get loose in your application as well. Also, there's that big thing called the BACB exam that only has about a 65% average pass rate. So you want to leverage your chances, and the best way to do that is to be precise. Remember that reinforcement is independent of cognition, so you don't have to understand it. You don't know that reinforcement is coming. You're not deciding to do something. All those things are incorrect. Reinforcement is something that happens independent of our thinking and our feelings and our knowing, and it only affects our responding. Okay, so reinforcement happens throughout the world. You know, it happens to me. The reason that you're listening to this podcast or watching this video is reinforced. The reason that I'm making it is reinforced somehow. The reason that I'm sitting in this chair at 5:37 p.m. on a Saturday night is being reinforced somehow. The reason that I worked all day, being reinforced somehow. So remember that everything we do, even if it's something that's maladaptive, if you will, is being reinforced. Hi, I'm back. I had a visitation by a corgi. Also remember that reinforcement is a phenomena. It's not a thing. So you can't have the reinforcements. Okay, I will take points off for the reinforcements. Or reinforcement as a theory. Several years ago, and I did this in 622 as well in their clarifying lecture, I was in a musical called Behavior Side Story. And it was written by Charlie Catania and Phil Heinlein. And it was a parody of West Side Story. And we were the Mines and the Axe. And as you could probably tell, the Axe were the good guys and the Mines were the bad guys. I was a Mine. And we had a song that I'll sing for you right now. What I can remember. Reinforcement's not a theory. Something theory explains. Dump the theory. The phenomenon will still remain. So that's your musical interlude for this clarifying lecture. But hopefully that helps you to remember that reinforcement is a phenomena, is not a thing. There's no such thing as the reinforcements. A lot of you got interval schedules incorrect in your inner teaching. A lot of you mistake interval schedules for differential reinforcement schedules, which are also schedules. So that's important to know. In an interval schedule, it doesn't matter what happens during the interval. What is important is what happens after the interval expires. After the interval expires, the first response after that interval expires is reinforced. So I think we talked about in the examples the idea of a bus stop. You can show up at the bus stop as much as you want in between, but if the bus isn't scheduled to arrive, your behavior of getting on the bus is not going to be reinforced. So remember that it doesn't matter what happens within the interval as much as it matters after the interval has expired. Remember again that you cannot reinforce people, only responses. If you reinforce people, you increase the likelihood that they occur again in the future. That will be problematic when we get to extinction. So make sure that you're only reinforcing responses. I know Skinner says reinforce people. I know that sometimes the book can say reinforce people, but it's absolutely critical that you understand you don't reinforce people. You reinforce responses. And again, this also comes back to the idea of changing people. We can't change people. We can only change behavior. Okay, so we're not in the business of changing people. We're in the business of changing behavior. It really is an important distinction. And you'll see that in some of my comments, I say some stuff about giving reinforcement and why giving reinforcement is problematic. Because it assumes that there's a mediator who's delivering something to you. Okay? So there isn't necessarily a mediator for reinforcement. Reinforcement occurs in the natural environment. So a reinforcer, for example, if it's cold, I put on a jacket, and that keeps me warmer than if I were to go out in shorts and a t-shirt, considering it's about to snow. So who's the mediator there? There is no mediator. It's just the weather. And the weather, in turn, sets the occasion for reinforcement. The schedule in the video, some of you were using some of the simple schedules. I want you to remember that simple schedules rarely occur in isolation. In the real world, simple schedules just don't exist. They really only exist in an operant chamber. We are surrounded by different reinforcement schedules at all times for different types of behaviors, and sometimes for the same behavior, from you know, in different situations. So these complex schedules of reinforcement, like multiple, conjoint, progressive, they're actually more about what happens in the real world than those simple schedules are. So what was going on in that schedule? Well, there were a bunch of things, okay? So you had concurrent, but also conjoint. So you had reinforcers for, you know, going the speed limit, and you had punishers for not going the speed limit. And so that's a concurrent schedule. And remember that schedules of reinforcement also apply to schedules of punishment as well. You had some conjoint schedules going on as well. The lottery and the visual feedback were conjoint. So the lottery was more of a VR type of schedule, whereas the visual feedback was delivered on a CRF. So you had a bunch of different schedules all going on at the same time with this. And that's probably why it was so effective, because the schedules that were manipulated wasn't just, oh, well, I'm going to deliver, you know, money on an FR5. That would probably have been a complete disaster. There were lots of different schedules going on, and that made it really effective. Non-contingent reinforcement. I want to make sure that you understand that non-contingent reinforcement is based only upon the passage of time. So reinforcers are delivered independently of responding, so it has nothing to do with what you do, and they're used, they're delivered only upon the passage of time. So they're usually used to break a response reinforcer relationship as an intervention, but they also happen in the real world. So, you know, no matter how much work you do during a day, when it's 5 o'clock in most jobs, you get to go home. That's non-contingent reinforcement. So remember that these are these reinforcers are contacted, is the best word, independent of responding. Remember that the brain does not store information, okay? There's a lot of reasons why we say that the brain does not store information. First of all, there are certain regions of the brain that do certain things, but we haven't found the place where memories are stored. There's parts of the brain, there are all kinds of different parts of the brain that have to do with memory. So it's not really like a file cabinet. It's more of a network of behavior. So if you think of our memory more like, you know, active fiber optic networks of behavior, that's probably a better description of what perception and cognition look like. Their behavior that's learned through contingencies. So we don't have a file cabinet in our head, which is kind of what everybody tells you. Rather, we have a network of behaviors that are happening in our head. I see this a lot, people saying that, you know, that somebody's engaging in attention-seeking behavior. This is an explanatory fiction. It's circular reasoning. Why? Because seeking is an explanatory fiction. If you're going into somebody's head and trying to figure out what they're thinking, it's an explanatory fiction. It's mentalism. I sometimes use the Ms. Frizzle test. If you remember Ms. Frizzle from the Magic School Bus, Ms. Frizzle had it was a cartoon, and she had a magic school bus that could do all kinds of things. It could take you back in time. It could take you all different places, but it could also shrink down, go into your ear, and go into the human body. So if Ms. Frizzle needs to shrink down her bus, go into your ear, and that's the only way you can observe this behavior, then it's mentalism, it's an explanatory fiction, okay? So remember that the technical term is attention maintained, not attention seeking, and I will take off points for that. I also want to make sure that you are using positive and negative in the mathematical sense. The positive means to add and negative means to subtract. So we don't have positive and negative behaviors, okay? We don't have add behaviors and subtract behaviors, right? We have behaviors that are maintained by positive reinforcement, where something's added to the environment, or negative reinforcement, where something's removed from the environment, that increase the probability of responding. So rather than using the term positive and negative, you could use helpful and unhelpful. You could use, social behavior or antisocial behavior, depending on what's going on. You could use a whole host of different words to talk about positive and negative, but reserve positive and negative for adding and subtracting. Speaking of positive and negative, let's talk a little bit about your question about positive and negative contrast. So when you have, either a multiple or concurrent schedule, usually in multiple schedules, the research that I did early on in my career was about multiple schedules where there's one schedule in one condition, another schedule in one in another condition. And you have a behavior that's reinforced in one condition, and that behavior decreases in the other condition. That would be negative contrast. Decrease, negative contrast. When a behavior is reinforced in one condition and that behavior increases in another condition, that's called positive contrast. Rate adds, positive contrast. Rate decreases, rate subtracts, negative contrast. So let's talk about some practical examples of negative contrast. So let's say you're in a school and you have one teacher that's engaging in a behavior plan where they're reinforcing, let's say, hand raising and extinguishing calling out. And in another condition, the student's still getting reprimands for calling out. What you're going to see is basically, and we'll talk a little bit about the matching law, is that usually what will happen is that calling out will be suppressed in the condition where something else is being reinforced and will increase in the situation where that behavior is not being reinforced. So if hand raising is being reinforced, it's going to happen a whole lot in the condition where it's being reinforced. But if you have negative contrast, even if there was hand raising in the class, it's going to go down. Okay, so where it's not being reinforced, even if it was happening before, it's going to go down. Okay, another reason to be consistent. And so sometimes we'll see this, with custodial parents and non-custodial parents as well. Now, let's say in one condition, the behavior is being reinforced, and let's say, the custodial parent is really on board with the behavior plan. And let's say, and we always, let's change it because that's a stereotype. Let's say the non-custodial parent is really on board with the behavior plan, and the custodial parent is not. But you see equal rates of responding in each condition, that would be positive contrast. More likely to see negative contrast than you are positive contrast, but it does happen. So typically you'll see the negative contrast effects where, one is increased and the other is suppressed. So hopefully that's helpful to you. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week.